there is right now a window where you can post a video about anything and it can get 100 million views.
Herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge Chef Talk. Heute zu Gast Simon Scribb. Simon Scribb ist bekannt aus den Videos What's Your Dream? Er ist UKs größter Business Creator und erreicht monatlich über 500 Millionen Menschen auf der ganzen Welt.
Because my father suddenly died of a heart attack. Not long after that, I found myself homeless. Every single one of your listeners is actually only three steps away from being homeless. I built 18 companies before I started doing social media hardcore. I know what it's like to build a business that makes money.
With all the knowledge and all the money that you made, what's the one thing?
Somewhere in your pain, somewhere in a problem that bothers you, is at 80.
Let's start this masterclass for the next 60 minutes. And I've picked four topics that we want to learn from you, Simon.
Okay.
So the first topic, and then we can start with that, is from hero to zero. For those who don't know you, you've been an entrepreneur since you were 15, but back then you were forced to become an entrepreneur. Take us back to the age of 15. How was the little Simon and what was on his mind?
I wasn't that little. I was a massive 6 foot guy, you know, at 15 years old. But I've only grown an inch since then. I'm 6 foot one now. I think I look back at my past, I realize I had a pretty average childhood. I'm one of four brothers. My mum and dad in love and normal, steady upbringing. But I think like a lot of people listening, I didn't know if I was rich or poor as a family. I didn't really understand that concept. And I didn't really know if I was living in, you know, a brilliant city or a backward town. But I was living in a small town, it turns out, called St. Neots, where a lot of people's aspirations are to work at the local factory. And so I remember 14 years old being asked, what are you going to do when you grow up? And having this warped idea of, you know, maybe I could be a lawyer or I could be a doctor or what's going to sound cool, right? And the reality was my career advice was get a job at the local factory or become a hairdresser. So a very strange disconnect, no real dream, just a way to make money later. That's really the only option in front of me. But at 15 years old, all this kind of like forward planning of what I might do when I grow up all shattered because my father suddenly died of a heart attack. And not long after that, I found myself homeless.
Being homeless with 15 sounds like a terrible experience. Like, what was the first day on the street like? How did you manage? Thinking back, when I was 15, I was playing soccer and I was walking around and I wasn't even about thinking what my job could be.
I think when I say homeless, there's all sorts of different types of homeless, right? There's people that are institutionally homeless, living pretty much their whole lives out on the streets. I see my venture into homelessness as it could happen to any one thing. Every single one of your listeners is actually only three steps away from being homeless. Let's say, you know, something happens to someone you love in your family and you have a breakdown and you can't go back home, right? Or you don't make a payment and you get kicked out of your home and you don't have a credit rating or deposit to get somewhere. So in England, for example, there's over 300,000 people now classed as homeless. I think there's 190,000 kids under 10 who are technically also homeless. Homeless means that they don't have a permanent place to live. So my first night of homelessness, I slept in a park and I didn't feel like I was homeless. I felt like I was just in this transition stage. So I couldn't be at home anymore. I didn't have a home, but I also didn't feel like I was homeless. Because someone homeless to me is sitting in the street with a sign saying, please give me money, right? I wasn't that. I slept on a roundabout in a park. And then the second night, I asked a friend at school if I could stay with him. And his mum and dad said yes. So I stayed on the couch at my friend's parents' house. And then I just jumped around, basically. And I was really embarrassed about what was happening to me. So for the first week, I feel like I just kept it secret that I didn't really have a place to sleep. It was almost like staying at friends, sleepover. It was almost like I'm camping outside for the night. I didn't register that I was actually homeless. In my mind, homelessness was something else. And then slowly I realized that I am actually in trouble. I think it's when you start to like realize you don't have a shower and you can't wash your clothes and you start to be a little bit of an outcast in society, right? People are like walking the other side of the street to get away from you because you look weird, right? You look dirty. So that's about a week in when I started realizing, oh, I'm technically homeless. I don't really have, you know, a place to have a shower. I think that's what made me realize I was suddenly homeless. And then I tried to get a job because that's what the school system told me, right? You're in school to get a job. So I went places to try and get a job. Went to pubs. Of course, I was too young. I went to different shops and they said, you got to have an address and a national insurance number, which I think you have the similar thing. In Germany, you need a particular set of numbers to put on the form. But I didn't have that yet because you don't get that till you're 16. So I didn't have the number and I didn't have an address. And I was starting to look awful. So no one would give me a job. So then I did the second thing that everyone tells you to do. And I went to social services and tried to get free accommodation. And basically they told me no. They actually said at the time, there are six women in front of you who have kids and we're not sure we could even give them somewhere to stay, but they're priority. And as a 15-year-old man, I was a kid, of course, but in my head, I'm a man, that made sense to me. A woman with a baby needs the accommodation more than I do. So it didn't occur to me that I wasn't being helped. I just thought, okay, those people need that more than I do. I will find a way. And so it evolved into homelessness. I didn't think, oh, I am now homeless. It just happened slowly. And it's a bit like a boiling frog in water that's not hot. It gets hotter and hotter and hotter. And then the frog is boiling and doesn't even realize it. I think that's kind of what happened to me. I slowly slipped into this homelessness situation.
Listening to the word homeless, and in my mind, it's hopeless.
Yeah, there's some element of truth to the two words, yeah.
So were you also hopeless?
Weirdly,
back then?
No.
Or did you already have this inner fire and saying, okay, I am in charge of my own circumstances and now I have to get on my own feet?
I think I had grown up in quite an aware household. So I knew that life could be good. And I had this sense, weirdly at the time, of hope, not hopelessness. I felt like I was free in a weird way. So the first week, just it is weird. I'm like, what's happening? And then the second week where I'm starting to find it difficult to ask for help. I'm starting to find it difficult to put on other people and stay in their homes and stuff. So I'm starting to really feel what homelessness is. And what I felt in a strange way was I was free because no one was asking me anymore, what will I do when I grow up? No one was saying, like, society's structure, you're going to go to university, you're going to get a job. That all seemed to go away. I left school, right, at the same time. So there was no longer this fixed path I'd been told. It kind of opened up my mind. It's a strange thing to explain, but I felt the opposite to hopelessness. I felt like, wow, I've got opportunity. I can do anything now. But what really changed, I think what really kind of gave me a sense of excitement was when the entrepreneur muscle woke up in my brain. So I wasn't one of those people at 8 years old selling lemonade. I was not, I'm going to be an entrepreneur.
You weren't the one with the computer and studying.
No, I was not. You know, all those stories of entrepreneurs, when I was 7, I was selling, you know, lemonade. And when I was 10, I was cleaning cars. And no, none of that. I just was a kid. And I used to ride around on my bike and climb trees. And I didn't think about entrepreneurship. And then suddenly, when these kind of two issues of like, go get a job, cut off, cannot get a job. Go to social services, cannot get social service help. My brain woke up and I felt like it came alive. It must be like eating sugar for the first time is sometimes how I describe it to people. Imagine eating sugar for the first time and there's all these senses just light up in your brain, right? When you discover a new sense, it's such an exciting moment. And despite being in this really difficult situation of being technically homeless, I felt excitement. I felt like I discovered a part of my brain that had never been turned on before.
Discovering a new sense and traveling back in time with you and imagining this 15-year-old kid who felt hope, but even being homeless. I think you and I, we speak a lot about our generation, and there are 700,000 young kids in the UK who struggle to find a job. And we're all looking for this kind of direction, And how can we, or how can someone who listens trying to discover this new sense of entrepreneurship, what's the beginning? What's the first feeling? Is it?
I think the first step is don't be a victim. I think a lot of people will look at their situation, and I'm very connected right now to the pain of 700,000 kids in England can't find a job right now after coming out of university. And they feel annoyed. They spent 4 or 5 years studying, investing, most important stage of their life. They're ready to go and there's no job. And what I have said to these people, I can tell the difference between someone that's going to get through it and someone that's not. The people that were a victim, they're going to find it hard to break through. But those that see an opportunity in it, I can't find a job, so I'm learning agentic AI and I have built this and I've done that. And wow, I didn't know this was possible. They're creating their own job. And those are the people that are going to have my story later. I didn't know this back then. I don't know where it came from exactly, but I felt free when I felt like I wasn't a victim. So those people need to not be a victim, because that's going to cause you to not fight. It's going to allow you to sit back and blame the government or blame AI or blame this or blame, instead of taking agency over your life. I think why I was so excited is because I realized I'm in control. My parents aren't in control anymore. My brothers aren't in control anymore. My friends aren't in control anymore. My school isn't in control anymore. The government is in control. I'm in control. Me. And no one's coming to save me. So here we go. I'm ready.
Ready to start a company.
I didn't look at it as a company at the time. I didn't think I'm going to start a company. And I think that's another problem. People overthink it. I thought, there's a big house. And they've got a messy garden. I'm going to solve a problem for that person. I'm going to tidy up their garden. And I'm going to make money doing it. Arbitrage. I did not think I'm going to build a gardening company. Mark Zuckerberg did not think he's going to build a $3 trillion company. He said, I am socially awkward, but I'm interested in this girl. I don't know if she's single or not. I wish there was a platform I could see status of what's going on with people. I want to connect to people even though I'm socially awkward. He kind of solved a problem for himself, right? That's what Facebook was. It was not, I'm going to build a company and make a $3 trillion company, whatever it's worth. No, most people just want to solve a problem they feel. So in my case, my problem that I felt was I needed to earn money, but I didn't have any money to make money. So the only way to make money when you don't have money is start a service company. So that's what I did. And it was so liberating.
And how did you start to get your first customer? Because we're always starting or talking about how to start, and people complain and said, I don't have a website, I don't have a logo, I'm not experienced enough. They find excuses not to start.
Well, they find excuses because they don't turn their want into a need.
What's the difference?
Well, I didn't want to start a business. I needed to start a business. Those 700,000 students that can't find a job, actually, they can create one for themselves. If they can't find a job, great news. You don't want to start a business, you need to start a business. So I had no choice. There were no other options. I did try and make the other options come alive, right? I did try to get a job. I did try to get social benefit, but I didn't get those given to me perfect. So now I have to do it. So knocking on the door of that first house and asking the person who owned the house if I could take care of their garden, I had nothing to lose. But now I didn't know gardening. I didn't know sales. I didn't know anything about the gardening business. I'm not even a very good gardener, it turns out. I find out later. But I didn't have a choice but to do it. Now, when I knocked on the door and asked the person, I wasn't selling, I was asking. And they can always say no, but they didn't. They said yes. And then I didn't have any equipment to do the garden. So then my brain just says, have you got equipment I can borrow? And they're like, sure. Use the stuff in the garage.
So you were like, just selling your time.
And then once I start doing the gardening, I realize I'm not a very good gardener, so I bring other people in to help me do it. And it turns out I'm quite good at knocking on doors. I'm not good at anything else. So I just knocked on more doors, got more customers, and I brought people in to help me do the gardening. And that is the problem with a lot of people now. They do think it through too much. About 3 months in to the gardening business, a company turned up at my clients' doors. By this time, I had quite a lot of clients, a lot of people using me to take care of their gardens. But they had bought brand new equipment, done a fancy brochure, hired a sales team. They were twice the price of me. So when they were competing with me, they were double the price. But they had all the fancy stuff. And I didn't need any of that. I had hired equipment. I borrowed equipment. I bought people in. It wasn't a sales team and a fancy brand. I won against the big companies because people over-engineer the simplest of things. And most businesses today, every single person who hasn't got a job today can start a service business and start a company today with no experience and no money.
And how would you, or what do you tell them, what do you teach them how to run this process? So let's do this quick one. You have all the dreamers who are watching now. They want to become a barber or a gardener or building a digital product. So is the first step really to do the sales or first step to build the product?
Neither. The first step is to understand yourself a little bit. What does not feel like work? How can you put a business model behind that thing? So it turns out I really like talking to people and selling. I enjoy it. Now, my wife, who's a designer, that's her worst nightmare. She hates selling. She's a brilliant creative. She just wants to design. Me, design, my God, so painful. I can't, for some reason, focus on creative design. So when I started a business with my wife many, many years later, she was a friend at the time who became a girlfriend who then became my wife. But when we started a business together called Fluid, which I'd later sell to PricewaterhouseCooper, what I was good at was sales and marketing. What she was good at was design. So we started a company based on design and marketing and sales. I loved it. I worked 18 hours a day, no problem. I loved marketing and sales. She worked 18 hours a day because she loved design. So I think a lot of people don't spend enough time understanding what they like. Now, once you know what you like, all you need to do is put a business model around it, wherever it is. If you like watching Netflix, let's say you like watching Netflix. Some people joke with me. I like watching Netflix. So go on then. Now what? I say, look, every time I go on Netflix, I don't know what to watch. Can you please do a website or curate something like Rotten Tomatoes, but better for Netflix? Like, go watch everything and then tell me what I should be watching, what's good and what's not, based on what I like to watch. I thought, oh, okay, that's a good idea. Exactly. No one's done it, right? Like, whatever it is you like, I love walking dogs, okay? Dog walking business could turn into dog grooming business, could turn into a dog training business, could turn into a dog food production business. Like, follow your interests and it won't feel like work and you'll be able to outwork everybody else. But that's where people should start. Now, ideally, then you build a business model into it that suits the lifestyle you want. Because sometimes people build a business that they don't love because they're not actually figuring out what it is they want out of the business. So lifestyle businesses are a great example. Some people just want to build something they enjoy doing. They say dog walking business. Then don't hire a lot of people. You go to walk the dogs. You pay all your bills. You do your 20,000 steps a day. Brilliant. If I was doing a dog walking business, by the end of the month, I'd be doing dog food and I'd be selling it online on TikTok shop, right? Because I know that a big business is easier to manage than a small business. But that's not everyone's cup of tea, right?
And that's the mindset and that's the experience that you have, because fast forward, so 15, homeless, starting your own gardening company, starting the next company with the hotel business, getting all the phone calls and building this kind of booking.com back then, moving to Hong Kong, setting up the first company with your wife. So right now, your UK is number one business creator. But I said it to you before, for me, you're not a creator, you're a business guy who knows now to run a creator profile as well. What's the difference between a creator and a business guy like you, an entrepreneur?
Creators today are businesses, they don't even know it. But a lot of people have millions of views every day, but they don't know how to monetize it. So there's a lot of funny memes around this, like the squirrel that looks funny. You might want to do it as a clip, like it just looks. Got 170 million views, but the squirrel made no money, right? Because the squirrel doesn't know how to turn attention into income. So I think because I'm a business person, I built 18 companies before I started doing social media hardcore. I know what it's like to build a business that makes money. And what's incredible about today is the attention economy. Like, I actually didn't understand how powerful social media is until I built a platform. It has blown my mind. I've been involved in marketing my whole life. From the age of 15, the gardening business, in the end, really was a marketing business. I would market that service, and then I would get more clients. People would come to me, right? I was knocking on doors at first, then I built a marketing machine. And I love marketing. Social media has blown my mind. It's next level. It's like, if you get it right, it's like owning all the newspapers used to be. You know, like the Murdoch model. It has transform the way business operates. So I think people don't understand. If you're young today, people are too busy focusing on what they haven't got. You can't buy a house. Who gives a shit? Right? Because you can rent. It's fine. What you can do is you can make a video about your product today and you can put it up and then go to bed. And when you wake up in the morning, you've sold thousands of that product. It's mind-blowing. And it doesn't matter how many followers you've got. It's all about quality of content in the sense of attention. Doesn't even have to be a well-recorded thing or well-audio thing. People don't realize.
Is there a misconception between... Because I have this discussion with a lot of people because right now everybody talks about personal branding, right? And getting this attention. And we have this smartphone and we can get connected to the whole world. But looking at your journey, your first step was to build a service or a business and then starting to document that journey. Isn't that the right way around? Because a lot of people, in my opinion... Even on LinkedIn, they're trying to become a personal brand, but there's no asset, there's no depth.
It's an interesting thing. I have a friend who went to Eton, very well-known school, and he told me his network. And I was like, well, what's the point of the network? All these random people that you know. So what? I was like, yeah, good point. I was told that going to Eton would give me this amazing network, but I just know a lot of people, so what? I think social media with intent matters. So I built social media 6 years ago for two reasons. First reason, it's where people are learning. So I want to fix the education system, right? Now, I can't get into schools because they won't let you get into schools. So I go to where people are learning naturally. They're going on YouTube, they're going on TikTok, they're going on Instagram. So I went on social media not to build a personal brand. I went on social media to learn how to communicate and teach the audience where they're at, right? They're not learning in school. They're learning what they want to learn through social media. So that's why I went on social media. And then as I went on social media, I realized something. The world has changed. People want to buy from people. And so nowadays, you need to know who's behind the company. People don't want, even if you look at like Facebook, I find it interesting. If you look at Mark Zuckerberg is the head of that company still today. The public actually don't like him. So why does he stay the head of the company? Engineers like him. Facebook is an engineering business. So that he is the symbolism of like the dorky engineer. So he's actually appealing to that group. Now he had a big makeover recently. And the reason for the makeover is he also has to look presentable in front of the government folks, right? Because there's a lot of pressure. Come to Capitol Hill, give a testimonial. He has to look like a grown-up. So they've given him a bit of a makeover. What I'm getting to is like, personal brand to me is actually a bit of a pain. Like I preferred my previous company in some respects, Fluid, because people knew the company name and I was not so part of it. So I could sell the company, it didn't matter. Now I can't sell Simon Squibb or any of my channels. It's not a sellable asset. But what it is a chance for me to tell the story of any company that I launch. And that's the exciting opportunity as a personal brand. But I warn people, a lot of my team, very talented team, they all see me and they all want to be a personal brand too. I always tell people the best thing you can do is have a good reputation in the business community. That's a good first step. You don't need a reputation with consumers until you've got something to sell or something to change in the world that you want to fix. Build a business relationship. By the way, that's what I've seen hanging out with you the last few days. The relationship you have to every single serious business person in Germany is like top notch. People will give me time because you recommended me. That is more valuable than public social media.
And that's the point that I want to touch on to build this reputation, because speaking of role models, starting, no connections. I think we all struggled at the beginning. I said to you, I was still someone coming from a small town. No connections, no network, no rich parents. And there's a starting point and there somewhere you have to start. And my problem back then was I wanted to start a company. There was no Simon Scrip online who could taught me how to do it. So I tried to find those kind of role models. And I knew, because I was looking at all the media, and to start a company, I thought, okay, I need an investor. I need this VC. How do I get a VC? Okay, I need to meet them. I need to pitch my idea. I had this idea. And what is your advice to someone who's willing to start their own business? Zero money, zero connections. And at the other time, you're saying, build a reputation. So how could someone start with zero money and zero network to actually start and creating this kind of reputation and network?
Well, again, just recapping what we said a moment ago, first step is like, what are you good at? What do you naturally want to get good at? In school, they tell you to get good at the things you're bad at. You're getting a D, do more of that until you get an A. I think the opposite in the real world, whatever you naturally like, it can be fishing, taking photos, whatever it is, you like it, you want to get good at it. Focus on that. The second step is, okay, if you've got no money, I do love service businesses. They don't sound as glamorous, but you can really make it happen with no money. So all you need to know is cash flow management. So what did I do with the gardening company? I knocked on someone's door and I said, I'll take care of their garden. They asked how much. I said, £200 a month. Turns out, by the way, that was probably quite a clever accidental thing that I did, because I did monthly as opposed to a one-off fee, right? So I'm locking people in monthly so I can start to manage my cash flow. But I asked them for a 50% deposit. And then I asked them to use their equipment for free. So suddenly I've got a gardening company, all the equipment, and a 50% deposit. The £100 I get from that person, I can use to pay someone else to do the work. And then once the work's done, I can collect the other 50%. That £100 is now my profit. Understanding cash flow, that's it. They don't teach you money in school. I actually think it's for this reason. If you understand how cash flow works, there's nothing you can't start. So anyone listening, maybe they say, okay, just for the sake of it, let's say you can post Simon Scribb's social media for him, and I'll pay you a monthly fee to do my social media, and then I'll give you a bonus for if I get more views, a certain amount of views. There is not probably a successful entrepreneur right now that won't pay you to do that, because frankly, everyone does need to build a personal brand. So you can charge someone a 50% deposit, which covers all your costs. And then once you deliver the service in that month, you charge the other 50%, which is your profit. It costs you nothing to post up a video for someone. You've probably already got a phone. You've probably already got Wi-Fi. If not, sit in a coffee shop and do it, so you've got free Wi-Fi. You know, like, I could make £1,000 tomorrow with no money.
Yes, but you need to acquire the first personal brand who would hire you to build this reputation and this network.
Yeah, you have to, I hate the word, I guess, but you have to hustle a bit. So I remember even with Fluid, I think was my 12th company, the company I started in Hong Kong. And I remember ringing up a company and saying, hi, I'm Fluid. I've noticed that your website is wrong and this is what I would do better. And they said, oh, thank you, that's great. But we'll come back to you. I was like, okay. But what I did do well there is I showed them what was wrong up front. So I didn't say all of them, I will take care of your business if you pay me X. Instead, I brought the value up front. I told them what I would do. I spent time analyzing their website, what was wrong with it. So they had me a bit of trust already because I'd done the work. I wasn't asking them to pay me to do the work. I did the work. Now they had to say yes and I'll make the changes, right? Now, I had to ring them a second time to actually get the work. The second time I rang them and I said, hi, I'm Simon Scribb. I'm working with CNN and I've gone through your website as well and seen there's something wrong. So what I'm getting to is like, you have to bring some social credentials to it. But I don't know about you. If someone comes to me and says, look, give me a break. You'll be my first customer. I'll deliver. If I deliver, will you recommend me? 100% I'll give someone a chance. I think people don't try enough. They don't ask enough. Be authentic. Be honest. Tell people, you're my first customer. I'm going to deliver. Give me a chance. This is what I'm going to do. This is how I would do it. All you have to do is say yes. I'll then go deliver. And if I do deliver, you pay me. If I don't deliver, don't pay me. If I do deliver, recommend me. If I don't deliver, don't worry about it.
And that's the valley of no's, I think you need to overcome. Because at the beginning, you get a lot of no's.
Yes.
And you just need this one yes.
Yes, I completely agree. I got really lucky. I often think back to that moment where that person whose house I knocked on said yes the first time. If they'd said no, I might not have had the confidence or realization that people do say yes. You have to knock on a lot of doors. That's it. And I think the more you can do up front to show sincerity, like people will send me a DM and they'll say, Simon, can you be my mentor? What does that even mean? But if someone sends me a message and says, here's a question, can you answer it? I can answer it. Or they send me a thing, Simon, I've gone through all your YouTube videos and I've redesigned your thumbnails. This is how I would do it. Let me know if you'd like to use these thumbnails, but I just thought I'd show you. That's a yes or no for me, isn't it?
Who was your first mentor?
I never really had a mentor when I was young. I had a few people that I thought were doing cool stuff. So I think Richard Branson, as a young English person, when I was, you know, entrepreneurship was this thing that people would say, what are you doing? I say, oh, I'm starting a business. And they're like, why? You know, can't you get a job? Mm. And I'd be like, no. I can't get a job, but I quite like being in control of my own time and building something. Like that Richard Branson guy. And he was the only person I could really reference where people would step back a bit and give you some breathing room. And after that, I really had like local business people that I would see them doing things. They were starting businesses and opening up shops, and I'd just be, you know, following them. But not, they wouldn't be my mentor. They wouldn't be helping me. I'd be just observing them and being inspired by what they're doing. Richard Branson didn't mentor me. I just watched what he did and was inspired. And again, I think a lot
like
of people,
like a role model.
Exactly. I think a lot of people today, they can actually pick a role model. They don't need that person sitting with them every day. Just observe what they tell you, but be careful. Be careful who you pick as your mentor in that world, because there's a lot of fake people. I always tell people, only take advice from people whose life you want. So if you want to be, you know, in police custody or in a, you know, a Romanian prison, then follow certain influencers, you know. But if you want to have a good reputation, you want to do the right thing, then pick the right role models and have just take advice from the people whose life you want, right? Look at the life of the person you're getting advice from. Is that a life you want? And that includes your parents, by the way. People take advice from their parents. You're going to have your parents' life. So you have to be really, really careful whose advice you take, because you'll end up with their life.
And so this is the thing about role models. But the other thing is like, are we rushing it? So let's get rich quick is, I think, a common sense. And talking about building a reputation, it takes years, not weeks or months. So are we all in a hurry? And do we all think we have to have this Lamborghini or this big apartment and penthouse within the 20s or 30s? Because how long did it take you to be financially free?
Well, I wasn't financially free properly, like cash in the bank, until I sold my company to PwC. So I had a lot of assets, but I didn't have cash in bank. So you're not really financially free until you have liquidity. So I mean, it took me 15 years to build Fluid from a small agency to one of the largest in Asia, which PwC bought. 15 years. Now, the thing is, I wouldn't have changed it. I think you need to build up stamina. It's like the lottery winners. If you win the lottery, most of them end up broke. I felt the same in business. I see people, for example, that become really big on social media really quick. They come down just as quick because they haven't built up a steady foundation. They haven't improved their skill. They've done one video or two. It's gone viral. They're up for 6 months, maximum a year, and then they drop off because it's not a steady climb. And businesses that do well are a steady climb. And the best businesses, in my opinion, take decades, not weeks. So if you make money in crypto, for example, which I know a lot of people that, you know, they go buy crypto, what have you really learned? It's gambling. Is there any compound learning there that you can apply? Now, my gardening business, by the way, 9 months after I started it, I made money every single month and then it failed. But you couldn't take the learning away from me. Mm-hmm. How to build a brand, how to hire people, how to sell, how to start something with no money. That was with me. You couldn't take it from me. So the failure of the business came because England has a winter and people stopped taking care of their gardens. But the learnings you could never take from me. And I think that's the thing people don't really understand about entrepreneurship. You don't want to rush it because you want to build up your stamina.
And people don't want to get to the, through the pain, even your dreamers. Yes, I have a dream, but there's a way too, and there's failure. What was your most valuable failure?
I've had so many failures. And what I've learned through that process of failing a lot is there's an incredible lesson from every failure. My successes, let's say me selling my company to PwC, is kind of luck. You can't learn a lot from luck. But failure, oh my God. So for example, I put $1 million into a comic book business called Devashard. And I loved doing it. I went all over the world. We got a deal to make it into a movie. So much exciting things happened. But then it all fell apart. It died. And lots of reasons why it died, but one of them was I had the wrong co-founder. Mm. And what that lesson taught me was make sure you have the right co-founder. But if it had worked, I could have been stuck with that person who turned out not to be a great person. And so I am kind of grateful when failure happens because it allows me to reset and go again, but get it right. And so another example is in 2008, the financial crisis in Hong Kong, I almost went bankrupt. And I've never gone bankrupt. I'm actually kind of proud of this, but I almost went bankrupt because Credit Suisse owed me a lot of money and they were about to go bankrupt. People can't even imagine this, right? Like 2008, I gave them massive credit. Credit Suisse giving them credit makes sense. And then basically they couldn't pay me. So I almost went bankrupt because Credit Suisse almost went bankrupt. But the lesson of that one was my business partner at the time is the most amazing human in the world. Because we came to a period where we couldn't pay our payroll. And I said to her, we have to pay ourselves first. You know, put our own oxygen masks on first. Otherwise, we're not going to survive. And she said, no, we have to pay our people first, Simon. She was morally better than me in that moment. I was survival and she was no. We promised these people we would pay them. We cannot not pay these people. They have mortgages, they have rent. We must pay them first, even if it means we get into debt. And she was right. So the biggest lesson I had from that moment was like, wow, I had the best business partner, the opposite experience to my previous failure. I had the best business person. That's why I married her and had a baby with her. You know, like it teaches you, the tough moments teach you about people. And so I know what a good person my wife is because I've seen it firsthand. She wasn't thinking about herself in the toughest of moments. And we managed to pay everybody. And then somehow we did get paid by Credit Suisse and somehow we survived. But all of those people remember that time. And a lot of those people I'm still friends with today. If I hadn't paid them, they would have quit, quite rightly. I would have lost my reputation as doing the right thing, as I've always tried to do. But thank God I had a good wife, back then a good business partner. So I learned, you know, through a difficult situation, what a good person she was. It reminded me what a good person she was.
What are red flags in terms of co-founders? So, okay, we have a dream. We want to start the business. You're saying, okay, let's go out, get the first yes. I need a business partner. That's the next struggle, the next stage of struggle. Someone who has no connections, who's maybe living in Hamburg or Munich, who's not finding her or her wife. Is there any advice how to find
those? We could just do a podcast on red flags for founders, you know. I think you've got to have the same moral code. So I think doing the right thing by people, reputation, like moral code's the number one. Because you can have a legal agreement, but if someone wants to screw you, they will. Legal agreements don't stop you from getting screwed by people. So I think moral compass, I think red flag wise, a weird thing, I've invested in a lot of companies. One of the things I always do when I make an investment is I meet the partner of the founder. So you've met my wife. You can get a sense of me through her because we tend to be with people that are a reflection of us. It's a bit like our friend circle. And so my wife has made me a better person. She also doesn't care about flying business class. She doesn't care about possessions. And you can see it when you meet her. She's kind to the waiter. She's kind in general. And I think that makes me a better person. I would say she's made me a better person, but I think a lot of people don't check the partner or the person they're getting into partnership with. So every time I invest in someone, I deliberately spend time with their partner first. before I confirm the investment. And I have seen cases where the founder is really lovely, but the partner is like, oh, I hate this entrepreneurship thing because we're not allowed to go business class anymore. And I, you know, we're having to get, I want to get a bigger house, but we can't. And you can just feel how much pressure that founder is going to have on them while they try to pursue their dream and their partner isn't aligned. So I have not invested in businesses based on the partner or the founder.
I think that's one of the greatest topics. I was discussing it with my friends. I think your partner, your choice of your partner is the biggest choice of your life because he or she will decide if you become an entrepreneur or a successful career. Because if you're hustling, as you said at the beginning, you need to work like 12, 15 hours.
Yeah.
And if your partner says like, no, you need to be at home at 5, it won't work.
Again, I've seen it. I have started a lot of businesses with a lot of people. So I've learned the hard way. I was working on this particular business. It's 8 o'clock at night on a Friday night. The partner of the person I'm working with is calling them up saying, don't you love me anymore? I've made dinner, you haven't come home. What's the point of all this? And that person is trying to follow their dream, but their partner isn't aligned with them. It's so painful for them. And me as a partner, I feel like I'm keeping them away from their partner. I worked with my business. I worked with my wife for 15 years, you know, and that was perfect for me. I probably wouldn't be in a relationship if that hadn't worked that way around because I love work and I want to build something I love and I want to enjoy what I do. And I basically said to my wife, let's do it together.
What's the one pattern that makes you decide to invest in companies and dreamers?
I mean, the ultimate thing is the problem the person's solving is personal. So like my thing, I'm fixing the education system because 15-year-old me felt incredibly let down. When I hit the real world, none of the skills I needed to live in the real world existed. I will not stop until it's fixed. You will not be able to stop me. Unless I die, you will not be able to stop me. And I think that persistence thing is probably one of the biggest elements in being successful. No problem can stop you. Nothing will stop you. It just cannot not happen. It may die as a business and you reinvent it. Like, for example, I launched Helpbank 3 years ago. I was prepared for the platform not to work. But it worked. But if it hadn't worked, I would have done it another way. Oh, there's no way I'm not going to fix the education system. And I think that's the thing I look for with people. The problem they're solving, like, is personal. You know, they were saying business, don't take it personally. What a load of rubbish. The problem has to get solved. And like that, that's what I'm looking for, hunger in people.
Hunger. And after you sold your company and you're still hungry, you still have this dream to fix the education system. You said you want to reach 10 million dreamers. Why are you still hungry?
Well, I wasn't for a few years. When I sold the company, I basically took 2 years off. And in that process, I mean, it's a typical process. The first 6 months was pretty cool. You know, I could buy whatever I want, do whatever I want. I didn't have the day-to-day stress of the business anymore. After about 6 months, though, I went a bit crazy. Like, people ask you, what do you do? And you don't know what to say. I'm just sit at home. And
your DNA, you know, is missing.
Well, I think purpose. I mean, everyone kind of felt it a little bit later with COVID. You know, you're sitting at home, you want to socialize, right? You want to be useful. You want to be seen. You want to be a part of life.
Of the tribe.
Exactly. You want to be part of tribe. Exactly. You want to be part of a community. You want to do things, right? That's why coffee shops exist. We can all have a coffee at home, but we like to be a part of something. So after 6 months, I just felt completely lost. And then I started thinking about, like, the question I wish everyone could ask themselves, if money wasn't an object, what would you do? And that's when I started thinking, because money was not an object. I don't need to earn money anymore. I don't, as long as I don't live past 110 and don't buy super yachts, I don't need to work again. So I could ask this question that actually is a really healthy thing to ask, even if you can't afford to ask it, which is, if money was not an object, what would I do? And for me, it's a combination of my skill matched with a problem that bothers me. So my skill is marketing, and I love marketing. I love learning new platforms, how things work, social and physical dynamics of marketing. I love that and I'm good at it, alongside the problem. The problem in my case, the education system that let me down so badly when I left school at 15, still exists today, has not been updated. It's got worse even. So I match the two, the thing I like to do with the problem I want to solve. And so it took me 2 years to figure out that and then reapply myself, because you have to fire up your engine again, right? You get a bit lazy, you don't want to work as hard again. And slowly I'm full steam ahead again.
And after 2 years, you came up with the idea, okay, let's go do some street interviews and asking people for their dreams. What was the beginning? Do you remember your first TikTok video?
Yeah, I do remember my first TikTok video. It was actually, and I've never deleted it, so you can go and see it. It's me taking my son to the zoo. So TikTok at that point was not a platform for me to do what I do now. Originally, it's a marketing tool I didn't understand. So I went on there with my son and I just made videos, TikTok videos, of him at the zoo. And I've never deleted it just to show people where I came from. I didn't go on that platform with a genius communication strategy. I went on that platform to learn how the platform works. And the videos are silly. They've got nothing to do with business. Now, of course, they weren't my first viral videos. As I'm playing around with the technology, I'm thinking, okay, I have business knowledge. And as I'm scrolling through TikTok, I'm starting to see this scammy stuff. Get rich quick, drop shipping, crypto, all this lies about how to make money. And I thought, you know what? Why don't I start making some videos telling people how it really is and fight against these fake course selling scumbags? And so I just started making videos. Now I have no need to make money out of anybody. So I'm just going on there dropping knowledge. I'm not trying to upsell a course or sell something. So I was unique on the platform because one, I started with no money. Two, I've actually done it. I have gone all the way. I've built a business and sold it to one of the most famous accounts companies in the world. It's legitimate. I've done it. And so I had authority that nearly no one else had on TikTok. And then I started posting knowledge videos and they started getting 50,000, 100,000. Not the 20 million views I get now, but like significant views for me at the time. And I realized there was a huge need for authentic, true business knowledge that wasn't put behind a paywall or scammy. And so it was really more like I wasn't trying to build a business. I wasn't trying to do what I've done now, which is build a platform. I just thought I have knowledge. There's people that need that knowledge. I'm going to give them that knowledge. The end.
For free.
That's it. That may be unique.
And then you came up with the idea, and what's your dream?
Well, then, like all content is just a process. So I start off by making TikToks with my son to learn how the technology works. And then I start doing what we call talking heads, which is just, hello, I'm Simon. This is how you raise money. Hey, hello. This is how you find a co-founder. Just stuff that's useful, right? And then as you see the views, you're like, oh, people need this. But then I hit a wall because I felt like about 6 months into what we call talking head content, a lot of things I felt I'd already said. So I'm like, why are people not starting? What's the problem still? So then I thought, I'll go into the street and ask people. So my original street content wasn't what's your dream. My original street content is like, what's your problem? You know, what don't you know? If I could give you a bit of knowledge about business.
What would you like to know?
Okay. Yeah, exactly. So I was almost like researching the audience. And then slowly, as people started giving me feedback, I realized that a lot of people had a misconception about the word business. Some people would say, oh, I don't want to do business. But like, why not? Oh, business. Ugh, yuck.
Sales.
Business. I'd be like, okay, but why? Oh, I love fishing. I just want to fish. I'm like, you put a business model behind it, you can do it. They're like, what? People are like, I want to be a dancer. If you put a business model behind it, you can do it. So I think I realized there was a massive disconnect between what people wanted to do and the acceptance that a business financial model behind it would make it possible. And that's when the eureka moment kind of hit. I'm like, the question of like, what do you want to, like, what business would you start, which was my original kind of framing, is a little bit, people, oh, I don't want to start a business. Okay, let me ask it a different way. What's your dream?
Then it took off.
Because it's more broad. Mm-hmm. Then people would be happy to say, I would love to design dresses. I'm like, awesome. Okay, how are we going to do it?
So you're someone who's understanding all the channels, TikTok, Instagram, Snapchat, YouTube. You walk me through your accounts. For someone who's listening and he wants to start, and what do I need to understand about the technology in 2026?
Well, look, I think, again, you've got to look at your personality and what gives you energy and what takes energy. So I'm an extrovert and I don't mind being in front of the camera. However, at the beginning, I was nervous. I'd go live. It was embarrassing. When you click live on it, my first time I did it, it shows a big zero. No one is there. And why am I talking to the camera with no one there? What a waste of time. How weird. And then one person comes in the room. I'm like, oh my God, hello. How are you? And then they leave. And you're like, what is this? But what it's practice. It's the Karate Kid, wax on, wax off, right? You just get used to communicating on the camera. Now, if your personality doesn't even like that type, I don't want to be on camera, then do POV content where you just hold the camera in front of you and you do content, let's say, for example, walking around Hamburg, right? That's your content. You're not even on the camera. Let's say you don't want to do video. Okay, you're good at writing. Then write up good LinkedIn stories or good good story posts in general, right? You got to look at what you're good at and double down and get super, super good at it.
And is there still a window of opportunity, or is it because 2026, it feels like everyone wants to become a personal brand and everyone is looking for dropping their knowledge and all that stuff?
The short answer is it's a huge, huge opportunity right now. I don't know when the window's going to close, but you know, there was a moment when buying a house was a good idea, that window's closed. There is right now a window where you can post a video about anything and it can get 100 million views. We've got 142 million views in a video. Go look at the video. 142 million views. Just for free, right? A phone in my hand, videoed it, up it goes. 142 million views. If you convert 1% of that to buy your product, you have launched a business. Like, I guess there's a big thing where people are scared to try and they make excuses. I don't have money. I don't have a network. I don't know how it works. It won't happen to me. Well, if you don't do it, it won't. But the biggest opportunity people have today is this social media access. Now, slowly, these companies, even on my feed, I see it. Some of my videos get suppressed by the platform and they want me to pay for the views. So there's going to be a tapering off. And of course, there's more competition. But you should try. And I think people, like, I always tell people, and this is very, very selfish. It's a plug for my book. I've got a book. But this is a good example. You can go buy my book on TikTok shop. The book gets delivered to you. When the book arrives, do a video about the book. It's crap. I love it. I don't love it. I haven't read it yet. And then tag TikTok shop. That sale, if someone watches your video and someone buys the book, you make 10% every time a book sells. You can become a bookshop. Now, if you make a video and it gets millions of views and you sell thousands of books, you can make money. You didn't print the book. You didn't write the book. You don't have to ship the book. But you can make 10% every book sold. Most company profit margins, 10% is high. Why not try it? Now, people say, oh, I don't know how to do it. Try it. You've got nothing to lose. Like, you know, outside of selling my own book and learning how to do it, people don't realize there is a huge opportunity in making media content, putting stuff on it that people can buy, and you making money while you sleep. And the worst is you learn how to do it. It's a useful tool. Even if you get a job, most companies will be like, oh my God, you know how to sell on TikTok shop? More likely to get a job.
What is the core skill for being successful in the digital world? Is it consistency? Is it authenticity?
Well, I think, I wish it was authenticity. I would like it to be that. But I think you don't have to be necessarily that to succeed. I like being myself, because then I can consistently, I've done it for 6 years, right? You can't be a character for long. I like being myself. But I think the truth is consistency, definitely. I think belief. I think pushing the boundaries of what you know. Don't tell yourself you can't do it. So many people say, I don't know how it works. I can't do it. Yes, you can. I think self-sabotage is a real problem for people. Like, I just met before coming here a lady who is an incredible dancer, like stunningly good. She's made 4,562 draft videos and not posted any of them. So she could post 10 videos every day for the next year, no problem. But she's scared to post them. Like, what's she got to lose? I'm like, post them, post them. I'm almost like frustrated. I think I convinced her to do it today. And she's scared what people might say, judgment. She's not sure if the videos are good enough. I'm like, just post them. Let's just see what happens. I'm just excited about the odds. 10 videos a day, every day for a year. The odds are she's going to get a couple of million views at least.
I think we're living in one of the most exciting times of history.
I agree.
On the one side. On the other side, we have a huge a generation which is scared, which is hopeless, which we can educate. Why are you... And let's walk, because now you're building, you have this foundation, you have this reach, you have all the channels, you're building Help Bank. What's your goal as an entrepreneur? What do you want to build and how does that platform works in the future?
Well, at this stage of my career, I'm building something that helps people. I want my son to be proud of me. I want the world to be a better place. I want to fix the problems I see, not just complain about them. A lot of people complain about the problems, like the youth unemployment, and then do nothing to fix the problem. So I want to be part of the solution. I want to be useful and I want to be seen. I want to feel part of society. So I have my own selfish reasons for doing this. But I think it's not about money at this point. For me, I want, though, a for-profit, for-good model. So I don't want to ask the public for money. I'm not a charity. I did think about doing a charity because it sounds good. But I think it really limits the amount of impact you can have. So if I'm paying people really well, as I try to now, if I'm a charity, I'm going to get into trouble for doing that. So the kind of guiding principle for me, I think future of business is for profit, for good. Now, in my case, my business model is to help anybody start a business and I will not charge them. I'm not selling them a course. It's all free. I'm not charging them for access to community. It's all free. I'm not going to charge anyone for help. I refuse to do it and I'll never do it. And that has cost me hundreds of millions potentially, by the way, because I could sell a course and people would buy it. If I sold a social media course right now, most people would buy it. If I said £2,000, I'd teach you everything I know about social media, I'd have 10,000 people signed up by the end of next week. I'm not going to do it. I'm giving it for free, right? Because I don't want to leave anyone behind. And I know that people need that knowledge to have a better life. So, however, I do make money from those that can afford it. So I have brand sponsors, I have affiliate income, I have view income. And we take all that money and we do three things. First, we pay people properly so we have the best talent in the world in a company that helps people. Second is we build infrastructure like Help Bank to help people for free. So we use some of that profit to build the infrastructure. And then third, we give money away. So we've given $450,000 away in recent times to people, no catch, to help them start their dream. And so to me, it's like, if I was a charity, those things would be quite hard to do. It's hard to pay people well because, I'm giving you money for your charity and you're spending it on salary. How do you think Google make billions a quarter? They have talent. And to make billions a quarter, you need talent. So for profit, for good. That's my mindset. Everything is geared up to help people for free. But on top of helping people for free, providing them knowledge, providing them community, we give them cash, no catch. So I am... But I know what I'm building is a $1 billion company, a $1 billion brand. And I think in the future, we may have investors and raise money. We might IPO. And I think it's fair that the business makes money and pays back those that support whatever we want to achieve in the future. But if we fix the education system, fund people for free, give them knowledge for free, give them community for free, but the business makes money, everyone's a winner, right?
How can someone join that mission? Because you're speaking about this first pillar, talents, and there are millions of people listening, watching to you right now. Who are you looking for and how can someone join?
I think the first step, anyone listening, this is for them, not for me. Go help someone for 5 minutes. Go on Help Bank and help someone. Go on Help Bank and ask for help. I think if people want to help, first of all, as soon as you do it, anyone that does it, and lots of people do, you feel good. Because we used to live in tribes, right? What used to happen, we live in tribes of 500, and if you need help, that you ask the tribe, they help you. But we've lost this. It's become so transactional. I'll only help you if you help me. Give and take, right? It's very normal. But the way we actually are happiest is give without take. You tell me what you need, and if I can help you do it, your life's better, my tribe is happier. That's our natural state. So if people want to help me, first thing is to help someone else. If you want your dream to come true, all you need to do, it's very simple, is help someone else with theirs.
What's your one last
of advice for someone who's 25 now, with all the knowledge and all the money that you've made, what's the one thing?
Purpose of life is a life with purpose. Somewhere in your pain, somewhere in a problem that bothers you, is a brilliant business that can help a lot of people. Find it, focus in on it. If you don't know it, go work with someone that's doing it. And if you can't get equity where you work, build something where you get equity.
Simon, the last question that we always ask our guests is, if you had to name three people from your network that we absolutely need to talk, who would that be?
Okay. To teach people business, you mean? You think this is what the focus would be?
Being a role model. Not even teaching business.
Oh, that's a tough one. I think my wife is amazing. She's quite shy. She probably won't come on. But I wouldn't be where I am today without her. She is very wise and very kind. And she has a lot of interesting insights around health and well-being that I think more people need to see. Listening to your soul, listening to your gut, paying attention to what your body needs. She's really, really good at that stuff. She's a good yin to my yang. I'm a bit hardcore business and she's a bit more health, well-being. I think she's my role model. I mean, she's made me a better person. I think when I was younger, business-wise, you're a bit like, it's about me and how I make money. And as I've developed myself, thanks to her, I think I'm kinder. I think I'm better. So I think she'd be a great guest and no one's really heard her speak. Whether you could convince her, that's a different matter.
I'll try.
I think it's really interesting, the social media people out there, to understand what's actually happening on the social media side. So someone like Stephen Bartlett, I think it's really interesting to see what he's doing and understanding kind of how he thinks. So he's been kind enough to give me some advice. I had some hate online and I asked him, you know, how do you deal with hate online? He's like, I ignore it. Carry on climbing. It's like, oh, that's good. You know, a lot of people don't know this in this pursuit of personal brand. I think a lot of people don't know what it looks like. And I think it's good to not just look at me or other people like Stephen Bartlett and think, I want to be them. Talk to them. He'd be a good one to talk to about what is it like to be famous? Because I don't like fame, but I like the influence fame brings and the ability to make a difference. I can fix the education system because I have influence. I probably couldn't otherwise because it's so entrenched in the world. Who's going to listen to you? Right? There's plenty of people, by the way, out there trying to fix the education system. They just don't have a platform to monetize it and actually do it. Right? So I am giving up my freedom to make this platform happen. It's a sacrifice, fame. It's not a benefit. There's near zero benefit to it. So probably Stephen Bartlett. And then a final one, let me think. Oh, so difficult because most of these people have been interviewed. So there's not that many people out there that I'm trying to think. I like my co-founder at Helpbank, Adam Moss. Okay. Again, there's so many people behind the scenes in anybody's successful business that you don't. Jack, Callum, I'm going to start naming people now. Dudley. There's just so many people in my organization. That it would be a really interesting podcast episode to interview all of the people behind me.
The story behind Simon
Squibb.
Each of them
are so good at what they do. They're mission driven and I couldn't do it without them. So sometimes I'm the figurehead, right? I'm the person everyone sees. I get a lot of the praise. Oh, what you're doing is amazing. None of it's possible without this team. I actually think interviewing teams behind successful people
the story behind.
Hasn't actually been done much. Yeah. Most of the time you hear the person who built it, but you don't understand the full makeup. Like if people understood the size of the infrastructure that I had, the talent that I have in the organization, they'd understand that I'm just a guy that talks on camera. You know, I get enrolled out in podcasts. But the people behind, the person running my database, Tobias who's running my database, Callum who runs my content strategy, Jack who does my brand partnerships, and Johnny who magnifies those brand partnerships and runs all our revenue models. Like Dudley, who's followed me around for the last 4 years filming, like the stamina required to do it, like every single piece, the team is so much more interesting than the figurehead. But who's interviewing the team?
So we will do the following. We will visit you in London, where your team is.
Yep.
We will do gardening with your wife
right.
and doing the herbs and the cooking.
Right.
We will set up a meeting with Stephen if he's in yep. town. And then we're going to do a full vlog with your team.
All right.
And we're going to speak to them. How are they operating Help Bank? What are the major skills to become an operator for Simon Squibb? And to see the real story behind it. Deal?
Yeah, deal. Yeah. All right, that'll be good. You're giving me a YouTube video idea. I don't know if I might do it before you. But I think it's a really interesting subject. People are always interviewing the figureheads, but not exactly. the infrastructure.
Exactly. We will do that. Simon, that was our first podcast in English. Thank wow. you for your time. Thank you for being here in Hamburg. Shout out to the city.
Can we translate it so the Germans can listen?
We will. We will.
You guys, you deserve this.
Do you know some
too.
German sentence?
The only thing in England we ever grew up with is the Audi advert, Vorsprung durch Technik.
Vorsprung durch Technik.
Yeah, that's it. That's all. Which, is, Audi which by the way, that car company survived. It almost went bankrupt because it came up with four-wheel drive. Did you know that?
Yes.
Yeah. So that entrepreneurial business almost died, but that sentence saved them. They invented the four-wheel drive.
Perfect.
There we go.
Vorsprung durch Technik. Good marketing slogan.
You are welcome. It's the only German I know.
Shout out to Audi. Yeah. Simon, thank you so much. Thanks for the advice. I think there are a lot of lessons learned in your story. And I think it's all about starting at some point and just go out there and being an individual in this world who's looking for a tribe. And this tribe can be online or offline. But this tribe or this individual just need one yes. They need to connect to real role models. They need to have find communities and spots, physical spots, like a coffee shop, where they can meet, where they can connect, and where they can help each other. I think we have this beautiful, privileged life. We can travel around. We can speak with inspiring people like you, getting their knowledge. But at the end, you can listen to so many podcasts and articles and whatever. If you don't take action and being in charge of your own life, it's just a wannapreneur.
Yeah, I agree. You've got to take action. That's how you learn quickest as well. Stop doing it.
So thank you very much. See you soon in London. And keep pushing Help Bank. I think there are billions of people who need your kind of mindset and skills.
Completely agree. Thank you so much. Appreciate your support.
Thanks, Simon. Thanks, Matt.